So glad to have you with us out there in the house, Mr. Wade Bowen.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm good, man. It's good to meet you. Good to get to sit down with you for a little bit.
Thank you for having me, man. Yeah. This is awesome. Appreciate it.
So I know we just got off the country music cruise in January, and you were down in the Florida Keys. Was that a songwriter festival down there?
Man, it's a festival called Mile Zero Festival. It is, I think this was the seventh year they've been doing it. It is, I would say it's a bunch of songwriters, but it's more of a band-oriented thing. It's kind of likes to get wild and have, you know, wild and crazy at the amphitheater down there. But they do, they do bar stuff down there too. It's, you know, Texas Red Dirt, Americana stuff, oriented kind of thing. And man, it's a lot of fun. They put a good festival on down there.
They have a songwriter festival down there in the fall every year, and I've been invited to go several times, but I'm always working when I. But yeah. I love the Keys down there. It's a great area.
Yeah, my first time to go to Key West was for a songwriter festival, and I fell in love with it. And then then these guys, I became friends with them, and they started doing this festival, the Mile Zero Fest. And man, now I'm just like I beg them, like please just put me on the list every year, because I fell in love with that place. It's just something about that town, and just it's a party, but it's also that festival. It's full of music lovers, but they're smart the way they listen to music. They're fun. They really care about what you're playing and what you sing. And it's just something really, really good about that festival. I just love going down there.
That's cool. So I know, are you considered a Texas artist or an Americana artist? How do you view yourself?
I like to classify myself as a artist from Texas. You know, I mean, that way it's I know us Texans we catch a lot of hell from people that aren't from Texas, as people that, you know, man, you people from Texas never shut up about being from Texas.
Well,
you know,
Texas is Texas. There's no place else like it. I spent a lot of time in Texas.
It's
a wonderful state. Yeah.
Yeah. But I've always felt like, you know, my music is, you know, we play all over, man. So, you know, I'm very proud of where I come from, but I feel like my music is as universal as I can get it. You know, I take a lot of pride in that. So, you know, I play country music, man. I love playing country music. So
what area did you grow up in?
I grew up in Central Texas, Waco, Texas.
Gotcha. That's right. Home of Dr. Pepper. And
right.
Scott back there is actually from Waco, Texas, too.
Waco, 254.
Yeah, Waco.
Yeah, man.
MCC there.
You
so
did?
What was the great stuff about growing up in Waco, other than the Branch Davidian?
that
Billy
was
Joe Schaefer. Right?
Uh-huh. Billy Joe Shaver.
Billy Joe Shaver.
The Lone Ranger Museum there, right?
Yeah.
Texas Rangers.
No, seriously, they have a Lone Ranger
No,
Museum?
It's Texas Rangers.
Yeah.
Do y'all affectionately call that?
I don't know. I mean, you know.
Ketox.
I don't know if there was a whole, Ketox, George's Bar.
Yeah.
You know, I played a lot of golf growing up and played a lot of music. I think that's why, that's all I knew. There wasn't a whole lot to do, so that's why we did that.
And of course, Baylor's there.
And Baylor was there. Yeah, Baylor wasn't what it is now. Baylor, you know, Robert Griffin kind of changed all that and grew it into what it is now. And then Fixer Upper grew it even more, you know. So
Chip and Joanna.
Yeah, I'm the son of an electrician. So my grandfather started Bowen Electric in 1955, and then my father took it over in 73. And so I grew up, you know, 12 years old. My dad had me Christmas vacation working, putting plug switch covers on, you know, and that's why I credit him for my music, because I hated it. I hated doing that stuff, crawling in attics and underneath houses. I hated it. So, thanks, Dad, for that inspiration.
I worked for an electrician right out of high school, right before I came to Nashville, and the electrician I worked for was colorblind. I have no idea how he navigated through. How would you do that, Scott? Reds and greens are kind of a big problem with colorblind.
I don't know. Yeah, it's a problem. Some of them have stripes.
I
have no idea.
Stripes on some of them help, and don't they have glasses now?
But they didn't back then.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was like 86,
yeah, back
87.
Then,
my son's colorblind. Try it and
see.
I don't know if I would trust him doing electrical work for me. That would be.
You don't get many second chances.
No.
Turn it on, Dad. I'm ready. Bring the tube before and knock this 110 off of me real quick.
Yeah. I would not trust a colorblind electrician.
Yeah. I actually was interested in electricity, and my mom did not want me to be an electrician because I was colorblind.
Smart.
Yeah,
she's smart.
It's kind of like having a deaf studio engineer.
Yeah.
Well, not quite. Maybe a little bit more severe. Yeah. Maybe that was a bad
thing. He can only hear, he cannot hear like three frequencies. The rest of them is fine because I can see most colors. It's just red and green that I can't tell the difference.
So we have a mutual friend. He told me that you've never beat him in golf.
Oh, God. Sounds like Randy Rogers.
Who's that? Yeah,
I mean, it's so funny. For a guy that is awful at golf as he is, he sure talks a lot of crap. Yeah. I mean.
Tell me something good about him. Let's just go after him real good. Come on. He was just on my podcast
I can't tell you anything good about Randy. I mean, I can't tell you anything good. He's just, you know, there's nothing good. I can tell you a lot of bad stuff about him, but I can't tell you anything good about him.
Well, he told me to ask you something real special. He said, can I talk to Paul real quick? Is Paul here? Can I talk to Paul?
We need a bottle of tequila, and you will really enjoy Paul.
I think I've got that.
Should we talk to Paul?
Yeah, let's talk to Paul real quick. Let's see what Paul's got to say.
Oh, no. Here we go.
Oh, God, where is it?
Did you lose it?
No.
Damn it, Junior.
Did he give you some video?
No. Yes.
Oh, God.
What'd you do?
Is this some blackmail video?
I don't know, man. Junior. Are you messing this up, man?
I'm fucking this up, dude.
Randy credits himself for having a lot of blackmail video of me.
Oh, my gosh.
Ooh, oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
They said Paul is a completely different guy.
Yeah. Man, I'm going to kill him for that.
I figured that'd be a good way to lighten the mood so we can get on with the rest of our chat here.
So for those watching.
Oh, we're going to post that. We're going to put it in there.
Oh, yeah. So for those watching, this Paul is my drunk alter ego. That's who Paul is. Paul is actually he's actually my grandfather. Paul Bowen was his name, and that's who I'm named after, and it's my first name. But I like to also name people, like your drunk alter ego, is who you actually become when you drink too much and become the person that you're really supposed to be.
I understand that. That makes sense to me.
And you know, I think Wade is a pretty good guy. Wade, you know, he's a good reputation and sings pretty well and has a good time. But people love Paul.
He's got a great personality.
People love Paul. That video was in Cabo. We go down there every summer and with our buddy Casey Donahue and Pat Green and a bunch of us go down there for his deal. And yeah, that's Paul sitting on the beach on a day off having some tequila.
I got a feeling that it got a lot more entertaining after that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure. That looked pretty early.
I was going to say that's
it about noon, like probably 2 or 3 drinks in about there.
Yeah. Paul has a lot. I think that was one of the nights when he ended up leading some, you know, the dance party at the end of the night. And that's not
the
Wade.
Limbo. You pretty get down there pretty low.
Wade is not the guy that leads the dance party. I'll say that much. But Randy, you know, Randy's just boring, and he's jealous of Paul, you know, so that's, he's a boring, grumpy, you know, he's a boring, grumpy old man in a young man's body, and he's really jealous of Paul, and that's why he brings this up. So I'm sorry, Randy, we need to get you to have more fun and relax a little bit.
There you
know?
Go, get him to relax a little bit, maybe work on his golf game.
We nicknamed his drunk alter ego is Oscar, because he's always grumpy and pissed off all the time when
he lives in a trash can.
More. He wishes. Yeah, we have a good time together, man. He and I, you know, we do records together and tour together and have a lot of fun. It's a side project. Hold My Beer and Watch This was a joke. We named it years ago and it stuck. And we have a lot of fun touring together and making records together and obviously making fun of each other. We live 2 minutes from each other and have a good time, man. So I'm going to kick his butt for that one. But yeah.
It's all a good fun, brother.
No, man. It's
so great. The music part of it, man. How different do you feel like the recording process is between the Texas scene and the Nashville scene? I think there's some difference. Not good, bad, either way, on either side, but I think there's a little difference.
Yeah, I think it depends on who's doing it. I think, you know, I've done some records in Austin, and I think it depends on who's doing it. I think, like, Lloyd Maines, for example, is a great example of Texas recording. The way he's a legend in the way that he produces stuff, and he's a legendary steel player. And we've done some records with Lloyd. And Lloyd is a class act when it comes to making records the Texas way. And there's a way more raw sound to it. There's a way more live aspect to it. Lloyd likes to get you in there and capture it the way it is. And the majority of the musicians that play with Lloyd, the majority of them are playing every Thursday, Friday, Saturday night out on the road somewhere.
Yeah.
And that's what you're getting in the studio with them too. And Lloyd's doing the same thing. He's producing, but then he's also out playing every night of the week almost, you know, still to this day. So you're getting that. It's a different way they attack instruments and the different way they're attacking the studio too, you know. So I think that's what you're getting a lot when you're
And I think the influences with Texas musicians too. I mean, you're getting a lot of Western swing influences. You're still some Stevie Ray Vaughan.
I mean, not blues,
as much as the pop thing as what Nashville has kind of been consumed with, a lot more pop stuff.
Yeah, you get a lot of blues influence. You get some Tejano influence. You get some obviously some rock influence. So you get a lot. I mean, there's Texas. The music from Texas is so it's all over the place. I mean, everywhere we go. In bars, there's music all over the place, and so I've drawn from all of that. And then, but the majority of my records I have done out of Nashville, and I love it. I mean, you can't beat the musicians here in this. You know, it's geniuses. You know, to watch them work and to be around them. I mean, new record coming out, and I literally just worked with them in the studio at the end of the last year, and I literally just sat in the room with them. On the first day, and I said, "Hey guys, I just want to take like 5 minutes and let you all know that I'm a kid from Texas, singer songwriter, and I do not take any of this for granted. I know who each and every one of you are, and I promise you, I'm not taking any of this for granted. I am so glad and so proud to be working with you guys. You know, this is a huge honor, and I hope you understand that I know who's here." And I'm so glad to have you guys, you know, when you got Tom Bukovac and Greg Morrow and all these guys that are just amazing, you know, guys to have in the studio. So it's just different things. It's just different worlds. And it's not really one is better than the other. It depends on what you're trying to do and what record you're trying to capture or now, you know, what song. I mean, obviously we're recording songs now too, not just records, right?
Yeah. And that makes me a little sad too. That's all.
Yeah. Whole nother conversation, right?
Well, we'll probably get down to that here in a while. I usually do.
Yeah.
You know, but it's amazing to watch those guys. Did you change your song selection process coming into Nashville? I mean, it's a little slicker sound coming out. A lot of different gear, and of course, Pro Tools are running rampant. You know, that's pretty much the way the sessions are these days. But it's just, they're so quick and efficient, and guys can adjust on a dime. And, you know, if you want to change the direction, I mean, they can put a new guitar on or change the setting and give you something completely different. It's amazing. How quick they can turn.
Yeah, for sure. I don't think I changed the songs. I think what I've really focused on, you know, I started producing my own stuff the last couple of years, which is really cool to be on the other side of it for the first time, you know. So when you're looking at it from the other side, what I've really learned and focused on from our team has been just focused on the impact of the songs. Let the songs be – try to get the songs – is the best, right? Try to bring the best songs in as possible. So write the best songs you can, bring the best songs in to the studio. And then if you do that, they seem to just kind of speak for themselves, right?
They do, but a song too, you could take the same song and if you didn't if you cut a session in Austin, you cut a session in Nashville, you cut a session in LA, and you brought different players in for each one, and nobody heard any of the other versions, they would be completely different.
Completely. Oh, yeah.
Because
for sure.
The personalities of the players would bring their own little things to
for
it
sure.
that would make
oh, yeah,
completely
for sure.
different.
For sure.
I find that very fascinating. I mean, you look at guys like Alan Jackson that went back and cut stuff like Mercury Blues. That was an old 50s hit. I mean, it's amazing how versatile a song can be if you can get out of its way and let it do its thing.
For sure, yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously, yeah, when you're bringing the band together, when you're putting the band together for who you're wanting in the studio, for sure, that's, you got to for sure know what kind of record you're wanting to make, for sure. That's the most important part. You're right.
Do you spend much time in Nashville these days? You just
I do. I have a place here, and I got away from it for a while. I had the record deal for a while, and publishing deal for a while. I had, you know, 10 years ago I had it all, and then kind of got away from it and kind of clocked out for a while. And the last 3 to 4 years I've been coming back at least once or twice a month.
Yeah. Writing and stuff when you come to town.
Yeah. Writing a lot and love this town. I really do. I love Nashville and love the writers here. Love the players, obviously, as we talked about. And I think there's so much about this town that I love. And so I've just really started to spend more time here and trying to surround myself as much and be a sponge again. Yeah. I really did that a lot in the early part of my career. And like I said, I got away from it for some reason. I think I know why. I went through a phase where I thought this town was over me and I thought that like they didn't really have a place for me anymore. I thought they'd kind of moved on from me and moved on to somebody else. And thankful, you know, to my manager now and some other people, and they just kind of convinced me that's not true. And so I got back with some other writers here and some old friends and really convinced me that that's not the case. And so it's been really beautiful the last few years to come back here and tap back into this beautiful town and, you know, get around it again.
And it's turned into such an amazing music scene. I mean, when I got to town years ago, we obviously Lower Broad wasn't what it is these days, but there's so much amazing live music, and it gets a little overwhelming. You go down there and you realize, God, all these amazing musicians and amazing vocalists and stuff. It's like crap. But it's gotten harder from my perspective to kind of break through the muck and kind of get your own brand out there. And when you get it, you better fight tooth and nail to hold on.
Yeah.
To it.
Yeah. I don't know how the younger people, new people in town do it, like TikTok. Stick their head above. You're right. I don't know how they stick their head above the crowd anymore. I don't know. It scares me to think about if I had to go back and do it all again. I'm like, I don't know how I'd do it.
Not growing up in it, I don't know if I could. I mean, it's just there's too many distractions, and it seems that it's, you know, like you touched on a while ago, we're making singles instead of albums.
Yeah.
And I miss that process because I don't think everything you write and everything that you pour your heart and soul in is ever meant to go to radio. Some things are meant to be B-sides, and fans like those things, at least the culture and the era that I grew up in did.
Yeah.
And I miss putting full packages together like that and working out the album packaging and all those things, and it seems like it's a dying art, man.
It really is.
Cutting EPs and five or six songs and you're just releasing a bunch of stuff and you move on. It makes me sad.
Another thing that you asked earlier about this difference between the music from Texas and Nashville and all that, that's a big thing too. Like a lot of my shows revolve around songs that were, you know, never like singles or anything like that. They're staples of my shows are songs that became popular off of albums.
Yeah.
That were, you know, just fans just found them and they became huge parts of our show. And still to this day, they're songs that fans are singing every word to that were not radio singles or any of that stuff. So they became huge songs for us. They would have never, like right now, would not happen. Right. So that's a big thing. And I think especially back then, the early part of my career, we were making records solely based off how we were going to take all of those songs and go play them live. We weren't making songs necessarily how we could take those and go play them to radio because I didn't even know that was a choice, right? It wasn't a choice for me. So everything I did in the early part of my career was how can I go take this and go play it live, right? So that was a big deal and it worked, right? So that you take that now, I'm not sure. It's really sad that you can't really focus on that right now. I think with this newest record, though, I noticed I kind of had a different approach for the first time because, like, I had 12, we put 12 songs on this new one, and for the first time making a full record. So I feel like they're cohesive, like, right, like I've always done, but in a different way. I feel like I had less pressure to make them as cohesive as I've done in the past. So, meaning less pressure to make them. So how do I say it? Each individual track could be a little more different from each other. So less pressure to make them, all sync together. So one song can be completely different from the next and it didn't bother me as much as it would have in the past. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So they can stand out on their own a lot more than I've ever done before, which was kind of freeing for me to like not worry about that as much. Yeah. So I tried really hard to just let that go, which hopefully that's a little bit adjusting to the times, even though I'm still making a full record. I'm not doing singles yet, but that was kind of a way of me going, okay, this is a little bit of me adjusting to a limit.
It does make a lot of sense, and it frees you up to, you know, do a different groove or something that might not typically be something you would have done and make it stand out. Cause I think there's something to be said about a little shock factor when people hear something they're not used to hearing from you.
Yeah.
Because being able to make them go, that they want to go back and listen to it again or tell their friends about it in the social media world that we live in is a very huge part of all this, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, you've got to be able to try to reach more people out there and grow that fan base. We're all trying to do the same thing. You know, we really are. It's different.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying just as hard as I ever was, and that's fun for me. And I on the same breath, I'm having more fun than I ever have playing music. I love playing music right now. I love recording. I love writing. I'm having more fun, really. That's as honest as I can be. I'm having more fun playing music right now with our show, more fun recording, more fun writing than I ever have in my life. And that feels really good.
Isn't that
what
it's all about?
Yeah. I mean, it feels really good to say that this far into my career. I mean, I've been doing it for a long damn time, and it feels good to say that this far in, and hopefully people feel that when they hear the records and they hear the songs, and they feel that when I'm on stage and as we're making fun of each other, you know, about Paul and all these things. Oh, yeah. I mean, I want people to feel that on social media, all these things, you know, that's the whole point of it. And hopefully that translates into more followers and whatever the heck it is, you know?
Yeah. Whatever you call it. Days. How's the nightclub scene in Texas was always huge. I mean, I really broke my career there. I worked so much in Texas that we caught every skull orchard in the state. I think I played. I mean, how big is the club scene these days? I mean, we've obviously lost a lot of things because of casinos and different things. Yeah. Is it still pretty vibrant?
Yeah, I mean, you can still, you know, they've always said about Texas, you can stay in Texas and make a living
Absolutely.
And never have to leave. It's still a true fact, you know. That's a saying that's been going on for, I was talking to somebody the other day, I was doing a podcast talking about Willie Nelson, and I was like, you know, those guys, along with some other people like Asleep at the Wheel, they started a scene back in, you know, the early 70s that's been going on for over 50 years. There's no other scene that can say that.
No.
And it's crazy to think about that, right? And it's still as vibrant to me as ever. I mean, you know, still playing Billy Bob's and those places that are still just doing, you know, it's fantastic.
Was West Fraternal Hall around when you started?
Yeah.
Remember that incident? I forget what happened, but something made it basically blow up, wasn't it? Or something nearby blew up?
Yeah, it was.
West Fraternal. It's in the West. The name of the town is West.
It was a plant. Yeah, it was a plant.
It was a plant, that's right.
In the city of West. It wasn't West Fraternal that blew up, but yeah.
But it got damaged enough they had to tear it down, right?
Yeah.
What does that have to do with anything, Scott?
Oh, I'm just trying to make some connections. It's a club in Texas that we won't be playing at.
He thought it was the club that blew up that you won't be playing. But the club didn't blow
something
up.
About, you said something about blowing up. That's all I could think of. I had to let it out.
I'm glad you got it out. I don't want you blowing up back.
It wasn't the club that blew up, but it was, you know, close.
It was close.
It was a small town. It probably affected it somehow. But yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of dance halls that close, the old school dance halls that close in Texas. You know, a lot of them.
Like got Green Hall. I remember playing Green Hall.
Green Hall's still there. Yeah, that's where I live now. I live in New Braunfels.
Gotcha.
And Green Hall still is, yeah.
I mean, just the stories from that place and all the people that have been through it. I mean, they're still amazing venues to me. There's the culture and the history of what's there.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Most places, I mean, they're all gone. You know, you get outside of Texas, there's not many of them left.
Yeah, it's still, you know, the bar scene, and there's still places that are popping up and trying to help, you know, the scene still go, and there's places that are closing their doors. I mean, it's still hanging in there. And then
did you ever get to play the Cowboys chain at all? I know there's one in San Antonio, but there used to be one in Arlington, the one in Red River outside of Dallas. There was like three of them. Then they had another one that was in Kennesaw, Georgia. Those were fun back in the day.
I played the San Antonio one. I played the Red River one as well.
Yeah.
Played the San Antonio one a lot.
Yeah.
That was a huge one. Still hanging in there.
Yeah, it's still hanging in there.
Is that the one with the stage that's
way high up? Yeah.
We're like, man, at the end.
That place gets packed.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, those stairs at the end of the night, at the end of your show,
I got to be careful coming down. Especially after a few shots of tequila there. Yeah. You know, Paul comes out.
Paul had a hard time coming back for that encore. You know, like, man.
I have. I've never fallen down those stairs, and I don't want to.
Yeah, no kidding.
So as you travel around, man, you do stuff up in Canada. What's your reach like? I know, you know, for me as a hat act, I always had a lot of trouble up in the Northeast. It was really, and that's always been a tough spot of the country for me. Midwest was always good. A lot of fairs and festivals. Where's your hot spots at outside of Texas?
We do pretty well in the Midwest. We're about to go on the West Coast pretty soon, which we love it out there. But you know, I don't know. We go wherever they let us. I mean, we just like playing. I mean, we'll sit on stage for last weekend. We played Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and each night I think each night got longer. We played for 2.5, almost 3 hours each night. We just get out there, and as long as they'll let us keep going, we just love it. So I don't know. We just love playing. Wherever they'll let us go, we keep going. So
as long as you never lose that, man. I mean, yeah, what's that old saying? If you find a job you love, you never work a day in your life.
Yeah, that's true, man. And I hate even calling this a job, right? And I know you feel the same way. It's like, it's not a job. As long as I'm having fun doing this, then why stop, right? And
amen.
That's the way I feel, and I'm having fun.
And you can tell that you guys enjoy it, because we just went to that show in Key West, and I play guitar for him, so you know, I'm out there just watching the show, and you can see that you and Cody and like everybody in your band, Jason Bolin was there, and then there was some guy that was before him that I'd never heard of, but he's incredible too, and just seeing the camaraderie amongst all these Texas artists, the bands and crews. And the fans, man, like they sing. I've never heard most of these songs, no offense, but I've never heard most of these songs, and everybody in the crowd is singing every single word of these things. And it's like, dude, I'm missing out on something special. We were in Key West, but it's like, I'm missing out on something special in Texas. And I love it, man. It's awesome.
Yeah, well, it's just, I don't know where it comes from. Like, honestly, like I said, we have songs that were not played on the radio back in, you know, 15, 20 years ago. You don't know where they found these songs. Obviously, they bought CDs and found it somehow. Yeah. And you're thankful for it. And I mean, you know, I got a song that's the third song I ever wrote in my life, and I have no clue why they sing it or how, but they do. And I don't either. I don't know where it comes from or that's why, awesome. But you're very thankful for it. I mean,
Texans are
we know why, you know, y'all have number one hits. I mean, a million of them. They're so amazing.
Well, I don't want to listen to most of this. Like in today's country, I couldn't tell you what's in the top 20 for the last month or two. I don't listen to it because I can't find anything good. And then now I'm dating this girl from Texas, and she's turned me on to your music. And then, you know, Randy Rogers and Mike Ryan and all that. Because I'm from the Robert Earl Keen scene, from that kind of deal. So I'm getting to explore and discover all these new Texas guys, and it's pretty badass. They're playing it raw, and it's not as polished as the Nashville thing, which I love the Nashville thing.
Yeah.
But it's just a completely different mindset, and not one better than the other. It's just completely different, because I know my sister-in-law, my wife's from Beaumont, so I spend a lot of time down in Texas still too. But her family, I mean, those young girls, I mean, it's like they're very consumed by Texas and red dirt music. It's a big thing.
Well, it's I think there's always, in music, there's always been like this – I know I loved it. Fans love to know something that other people don't know about yet.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I think that's kind of what it's always been. Like, we love to know something that you don't know about, you know, and I think that's kind of been the Texas thing too. Like, but I don't know. Maybe that's it.
You know, the weird thing for me though is like when Pat Green broke out with Wave on Wave, it's like some of the Texas bass got a little ticked at him because they felt like he was cheating on them. You know, so that's kind of a weird thing to kind of balance out too.
Right. But then, you know, you've had guys like, you know, Cody Johnson and Parker McCollum now that are obviously breaking that. Like,
they're going to bust through all, they'll break that glass ceiling and everybody. I mean, it moves on. That's just part of it.
You, those guys have proven that you have great songs and, you know, just move on with great career.
Cody's killing it, man.
Yeah.
Golly.
Great voices and
just
great
out
songs.
There killing it.
Great voices, great songs break all barriers, right? It doesn't matter. Absolutely. So, I think there's ways to do that in the right way, and it doesn't matter. So, and I think, you know, like Randy Rogers, the Randy Rogers band, those guys, people have called them Texas music forever, and same with us, but we've done all of our records out of Nashville and with the same people that are doing, you know, so like they were on MCA Records their entire career, you know, for 10 years, I guess.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, but you know, you can't tell their fan base that, you know. So
do you ever get to play Austin City Limits? It's been years since I got to do it.
We never did.
You know, back in the 90s, I mean, I remember watching Stevie Ray and all those guys on there when I was coming up, man. I never got to meet him, but that used to be such a great show, and I don't even know where you find it anymore. Austin's kind of, keep Austin weird, but it's gotten a little weirder.
Yeah. I don't know. I used to love that show, watching it. Yeah, that was always a bucket list of mine, and never gotten across it off the list.
Got a chance to play the Grand Ole Opry yet?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, what's that like?
I think we've done it over 10 times now, which is... Every time is just, as you know, every time feels like the first. It's amazing. I love doing it. It's one of my favorite things to do. I I think some people do it and they're cool. I've done it and I don't really care to do it anymore, but I love it. I think it's still to this day one of my favorite things. I would do it all the time if we could.
I've always enjoyed the rhyming a little bit more because just the history, just standing on the stage of the rhyming, it's just like, man, Elvis stood here. You just stand there and you just kind of soak it all in and just think about everybody that's been there.
I got to do the Opry at the Ryman one time and it was amazing. That was my favorite one for sure. We're playing the Ryman for our show with Randy Rogers Band on coming up, and that's a lot. That's a whole nother thing too. I agree with you. There's something special about being on that stage in that room at the Ryman is just mind blowing to me.
How many days a year are you working?
Probably for shows around 110.
Yeah, that ain't too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you do when you're off? I mean, West Texas, you hunt much?
Do a little hunting, yeah. Actually, I went sandhill crane hunting this year for the first time ever, and that was a blast.
Sandhill crane. Okay. Yeah.
Sounds illegal.
Tell me. Okay.
You got to do it. Go to West Texas.
Is it a different kind of crane? I thought cranes were protected.
It's legal, I promise. Okay.
Or you wouldn't be talking about it.
Don't
hit them with a spotlight about midnight. Is that what you do?
You got to try it. I'll give you the info. You'll absolutely love this. It's so much fun. But yeah, I haven't been a hunter my whole life. My dad played golf. My dad played golf at Baylor and had a golf club in my hand at like 3 years old. So that's what I did with my whole life with my dad. So I didn't start hunting until recently over the last few years. And so I love doing that on my off time now when I can. Love to play golf still and just try to keep up with my kiddos pretty much. Yeah. That's what I do. They're older now, 18, 15. So just drag them around football and all the sports and all that. That's kind of what I'm doing now, my off time.
Had a chance to go to the Masters yet?
I go to the practice rounds, yes. Yeah. I love it.
I've been three times. The first time I went, I had a buddy of mine that goes every year. He said, I want you to take the time to literally go around the golf course and intentionally see if you can find a weed. I searched that entire course. I found one little tiny weed poking through the crack of the men's restroom right there at the front gate, right there by the concession
center.
Didn't
tell them, and it's like, they'd probably be mad.
And there was a storm the night before, and the wind was so terrible. I swear they got up in the pine trees with leaf blowers. I didn't even see a pine straw in the canopy of the freaking trees, man. Everything is just plush and immaculate. You can still get an egg-saddled sandwich and a pimento cheese sandwich for about $2.
Yeah.
You get two choices of beer. You get a foreign and domestic.
Yeah.
And that's it. And they stopped. I heard that the members didn't like seeing the golf carts or the transport carts bringing kegs of beer out. So they bought a big lot off property and they cut pipes. So they pipe it from an ice house to every concession stand. They pump the beer in from offside so they don't carry kegs back and forth through the golf course.
To mess the grass up.
Just didn't want people seeing them.
Yeah.
So they just pump it underground. Mm-hmm. It's like, this is a golfer's heaven. That's what it is. One of the most beautiful places on the freaking earth.
It is, man. It is so much fun to go and just be there. I've done it about three times. We have hopped on my bus with eight of us, and we played golf, stopped all the way there from Texas, and played golf the whole way back, gone to the practice round, and then played golf the whole way home. And it's so much fun. That like I said, that's always been the thing with my dad and I, and it's our bonding thing is me and him play golf together.
Did you ever try to get your card?
No. Heck no. I was never that serious about it.
You keep letting Randy beat you. I mean,
oh my gosh. Oh my God. Throw up in my mouth.
What's the best round you ever shot?
Oh, I've shot even par and that's it. I've never got under par.
Yeah.
But ironically, I've never beat my dad. I lipped out one time to beat him, and it went all the way around the cup and came back at me.
And just said, nope,
didn't. And then another time, I thought I beat him, and we went up and figured the score, and I had the scorecard wrong. We tied.
So you strike me as a golf purist to a large degree. How you feel about LIV?
Well, it's so messed up now. I mean, I feel sorry for the PGA guys now because they're just getting messed with now. I mean, obviously, all of them are just screwed over. I think the PGA Tour is really messed with them now because so many of the guys that took the money are obviously on the wrong or the right side now because they have the money, and now the commissioner is like
a lot of friction.
Yeah,
and I know they're like, trying to do this merger, but I've actually gone back and forth on TV because I love to watch it on TV too, and the energy at Live is just so amazing. You got music going on in the background, yeah. People's having a good time. It's just the whole feel of the whole thing just feels a little bit more contemporary. Everything's set up like a video game when you're right. Scoreboard and all that stuff. But as far as a person that truly loves the culture and the history of golf and the etiquette and everything that goes into it, you know, it's kind of like watching Happy Gilmore. You appreciate right. The guy from left field that comes out there and does well, but you still want the tradition to be held up to.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I personally don't like the Live.
The format. Yeah,
I'm not a big. I like the traditional.
Me too.
Golf. Yeah. I mean, I just love the game of golf. I do. I mean, I love the way I've played it my whole life, and I understand the way those guys went for the money and did that stuff for their families or whatever their choices were. You got to respect it. I think the whole business side of it has just gotten messed up. It's crazy.
If they do the merger, will their stats roll back into their player ratings on the world stage? I'd see that's one of the things that I think they messed up on when they walked away from the PGA. They lost their stats.
Yeah.
Because anything they do with Liv, does it go into their stats and that for their world rankings?
Right. Yeah. I don't know. That's what I'm saying. Everything is just a whirlwind right now. I don't know if anybody's got anything figured out. I mean, it's just a mess. But right now the PGA guys that are stuck with the PGA are the ones that are really getting screwed over. You know,
I haven't looked. I wonder if it's affected the viewership and stuff on the stuff there, like the tournaments and stuff right now. I don't know.
I really haven't looked either.
It's, you know, with Tiger being out of, you know, Tiger has such a huge impact when you can tell when you're on a course, on a tournament, when Tiger's playing, you can tell where he's at because there's no other roar like it on the golf course.
Right. Yeah.
It never has been. Right. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny, people try to act like there's been a bigger impact on golf, but no.
No, there hasn't been. I've heard a lot of stories from Daly. Daly will tell you about him drinking all day and then going out and beating Tiger the next day. Tiger yeah. going to work out. Oh, I can't sit down with y'all.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. being so disciplined and structured and stuff. And Daly's like, ah.
Yeah.
Hitting exactly. it with one hand, putting it 2 inches from the cup and stuff like that, you know. It's like, how do you do that, dude? It's amazing to me.
It's definitely down. It says down 27% from last year.
Really?
36% from 2022. So yeah,
I figured it probably was. I mean, they've obviously lost viewership to the Live people, and then you feel like the overall.
I thought that would happen as soon as they got a network on, and I just now in the last few months since we started up this year have been seeing it on DirecTV, and it wasn't there last year. So they were kind of on the internet, but once they kind of got a channel where they were able to get some viewership, I thought that would be the case for a
yeah,
while.
Yeah,
it's just so it's hitting that younger demo, I think, and if it does nothing else, we need people to be re-inspired by golf because we need to capture that younger generation and
yeah.
get some more people involved in golf.
So 1,000%.
I mean, golf courses are not cheap to maintain.
No.
They're an expensive thing.
We're not. We're definitely not getting the kids out there anymore, and that's no. sad.
And
I'm guilty of it with my kids. Yeah. My kids are not out there playing golf, and they should be, and I'm guilty of it as a dad.
They do what they want to do. I've tried to get mine out there, too, and they could care less.
Yeah,
they don't care. Yeah.
Same here.
Yeah. What I want to talk about things going on in Texas. I have a lot of. I'll just give you my opinion. I don't know what yours is. I'm very impressed with Governor Abbott. I know that's a controversial stuff, but I think he's really tried to get some things under control down there. Have you had some experiences with things with the immigration and stuff that's going on? Have you had any negative impact from it?
I have not. I have not. I don't really. I stay away from as much of politics yeah. as I possibly can. I can't stand politics. I stay away from it. I just really, really don't deal with any of it, honestly. Governor Abbott seems to be doing the best he can, and
yeah.
I've supported him on some of his parties that I've done some fundraising stuff for. I played some of his stuff for music, and that's about it. You know, yeah. that's about as far as I get for politics.
How about international stuff? You toured overseas at all?
Yeah, we've done some stuff. Especially before COVID, I was starting to go over there and play some acoustic stuff, and like I started, it was building like I had a plan where we were going over there like playing some acoustic stuff, and then was bringing the band for the first part of the show or yeah. first part of the run, and then we'd send them home and finish out acoustic for a while, and we're going to start doing all that. And then after COVID, we just kind of bailed on a lot of that plan.
Did COVID shut you down pretty quick? Did y'all have to stop for a while like the rest?
Yeah, we had the whole like shut down for a while, and then we came back and then shut down and came back. And finally I was like, all right, I'm done with this. I'm not going to let them dictate my calendar anymore. So I shut down from July 2020 through the rest of the year. I just shut my calendar down completely, and I just sent out emails to my fans and started doing backyard barbecues on my own and filled my calendar with my own schedule and made a great living for the rest of the year.
That was such a strange time, man. I think we shut down in March, and then everything was kind of dead, and I had like 9 shows on the books for July. And I was like, okay, we're going to get back. We're going to get everything. And then all of a sudden, they just all went away.
Well, yeah, we were sitting there waiting like a week out.
Yeah, and then everything starts canceling.
Yeah, we're sitting there waiting a week out, like almost every week going, we don't know if we're going. We don't know if they're saying yes. They're saying no. We don't know. And it's like, I got tired of it, man. So I just...
I've never seen anything like it. I mean, I've never experienced... I mean, in the 30-something years I've been touring, I've never taken a year off. I mean, I take a holiday off and weekends here and there, but I've never shut down for a year. And I had a hard time with it. I mean, I went through depression. I mean, because it's hard to slow down something that you've been doing for so long. And I had an even harder time starting back up because once I kind of got it through my brain that we're going to be down for a while and kind of restructured my life a little bit, then all of a sudden it's like, I got to get back in the groove. It's like, it took me a little bit.
And then one of the first things we did was the drive-in show, which is just crazy.
Oh, that
was
rough.
Yeah, that was crazy. Yeah. That's
weird. We did a drive-in out in Ventura, California at the state fairgrounds, and they had a stage set up in the middle of the parking lot. People could get out of their cars, but they had them all spaced out, and we didn't even have a PA. They piped the songs through your car radio, and it was the most sterile, strange thing that I've ever done in my life.
We did a couple of those, and it was so rough. Weird. So weird to be on a stage. And everyone in their cars, it was so crazy.
So weird.
So there's no clapping. You don't really hear any hooting and hollering. You just see windshield wipers and lights flashing and horns honking. That's about it.
One of the first things, I remember hearing, like, they might shut us down. So I started, you start hearing about this thing called live streaming, right? And that was the first thing you hear about. I'm like, what is this I'm hearing about? We might start doing this thing, right? So we started researching it. And so, like, about 2 or 3 weeks in, we started doing a show called Wade's World. Live streaming it, and man, that was fun. That kept me busy, and we did it every Friday. That whole, pretty much the whole year, we did Wade's World from my house in my little music room out there, and it was amazing because we took donations, and then we sold merch online, and our fans were unbelievable the way they supported us. Because you're talking about a lot of people, they were home and scared financially as well.
Yeah.
They just supported the hell out of us, man. And we had guests come on, and we'd give them money too and split the deals with them, and they supported the hell out of our guests. And it was just amazing. I had a lot of people that helped me, obviously. I'm not very, like, all of this stuff right here, I wouldn't have a clue what the heck y'all are doing.
We didn't have a clue.
But we figured it out. Isn't it crazy? You know, I had no clue what live streaming was then and what y'all are doing now. It's amazing what we figured out at the time. And it was so
fun. Well, the whole world changed. I mean, look, we didn't even know what Zoom was around. But if you'd have bought a whole bunch of Zoom stock during that period of time, because, I mean, it bridged a gap for a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, Skype and Zoom and all those things. I mean, it changed the landscape.
I wrote my whole next record off Zoom, you know.
Is that still weird though? There's something about being in a room with somebody.
Oh yeah, no, I don't prefer it.
Yeah,
but we had to do it. You know.
Yeah.
I was gonna say, like, when y'all did the live stream thing, were you able to interact with the fans, or was it like a live chat thing or something going on, or was it just like a rehearsal kind of deal and they can just watch you? You know what I mean? Like, cause you don't get the reaction from hearing them, or if you don't see them saying anything, and it's like, man, did they like that? Did they even hear us? Like,
yeah, we had a. I can't remember what it was. We had a way to they were responding as we were playing, and we were taking requests. And we had, I think at the time also, we had a phone number that they could text me. And then we had, cause we were live, so they could comment at the time. So we were, cause I had people like y'all that were helping me too, you know? So, and then they shut us down from that. So at one point I was doing everything by myself, and I had like everything around me. I was like go gadget arms everywhere, like trying to do everything around me at one time. And I had like Brandi Clark on a Zoom, and I was running her live through a deal as a guest on my show. No one there to help me because everyone was supposed to be away from each other. And it was like trying to run everything myself. It was weird times, man.
But you know how bad that would have been for him? You see how long it took him to get that up the hall while I got a line. It would be a dangerous thing.
Well, I'm still not sure.
I just didn't accept it. That's what it was. I know where I messed up now. It won't happen again.
I'm still not sure it ran live. Who knows? It may not even post it to the.
It'll find its way in
there. We did one for some corporate event or whatever. And it's like, I remember somebody turned around and was like, man. Did they even hear us? Like, how do we know that they are responding at all? Like,
yeah.
I assume it's being piped in there, but I don't know.
Yeah, it was strange times. I'm glad that's over. I don't ever want to go back to that.
No.
I do not.
No, hell no.
I don't want to do that. We tried to get creative, so we call this our compound. And so we had all the families here on the compound. We created a day of games. And so we made a trophy up from some old dance trophies and stuff. And we had kayak races on the pond. We had a wiffle ball tournament.
Oh, that's great.
So every family had their team together, and we all had our little games. And we
that's
played horseshoes. We shot BB guns. I mean, we just created a whole bunch of events and just had a big time.
Probably had some of the best times of your life.
Drank a lot of beer.
Yeah, drank a lot of
we
beer. Did, yeah.
We drank a whole lot of beer.
Yeah.
Yeah, beer. Bud Light was still on the menu back then.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of it. The only thing that kept you sane through it all was to drink enough beer.
We did drink a whole lot of beer. That was the one thing was going to the Dollar General and getting some beer.
Yeah.
And always making sure that any paper products that you could find, grab the paper towels and the toilet paper.
Yeah.
I mean, it was so bad if somebody from here went to the store. They've got toilet paper at Dollar General. Hurry.
Yeah. Get it all. Yeah.
It's so bad, man.
It's such a weird time. I think about it all the time. I tell our grandkids about that. Like, man, they're not going to believe us. You know?
I hope we never see anything like that again. Let's move on past that.
No kidding.
But I remember, I love Asleep at the Wheel and Ray Ben. I got to spend some time off and on with Ray over the years. I hope his health is doing a little bit better. One of the sweetest human beings on the planet. But he's not a Texan.
No?
He's not a Texan.
No,
he's from like Wisconsin.
Yeah, he's from up north.
No. Yeah. You didn't know that?
Got the whole world fooled.
He's not a Texan, dude.
No.
Neither was Jerry Jeff, but he got there as quick as he could.
I think the most tore up I've ever been with my life was with him.
Yeah.
With Ray.
Yeah. We played a big festival in San Francisco, of all places, and Ray got me destroyed. Well, as far as I'll go. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've never been on the bus with Willie.
Yeah. Yeah, you stay away from that stuff, man.
Yes, Asleep at the Wheel came to our school, to MCC, for some reason, and we got to sit there, you know, and play a few songs, and then they had talked to us, and I just remember that was the loudest I'd ever heard any music in my life up to that point. It was just so loud.
Oh, his guitar was always on stun.
Yeah, it was super loud. I was like, "This, I like this, but it's freaking loud." You know?
Yeah, Ray's always been so good to us, man.
Oh,
so nice,
sweet man.
And just always so willing to help and talk. And
yeah, man, we learned
never,
a lot.
He never has never once like big timed me or my
He's
band
so
at
gracious,
all.
Man.
So gracious.
He's just one of the good guys,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
One of those guys that's done it his whole life that is just passionate about the music.
Yeah,
really, genuinely cares about it. It's like his heart and soul goes into it, man.
For sure, man. Yeah. Great guy. Great hang and fantastic guy. Just always, like I said, he's always just willing to hang out. You just walk right up to you and.
Oh, yeah.
Like your best friend.
And pick up where you left off. You hadn't seen him in 5 years. It doesn't matter. He's that guy.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. What's on the agenda for this year? I know you got a lot of tour dates. What other stuff you got going on?
Yeah. So, new record coming out in May.
Yeah.
So, everything that comes with that, you know. And then Randy and I have another Hold My Beer project coming out. A few months after that. So we actually did a whole record and then we split it up. So we did Hold My Beer Volume 3 and an EP last summer. And this is Hold My Beer Volume 4 coming out this summer. We split it up 6 songs and 6 songs, trying to think that was going to help. You know, we were talking about the releasing the whole album thing. We were thinking this might help push it more. I don't know. Well, who knows? So that'll come out later in the year, too. So doing all that, everything that comes with all that. And then we'll do the tour, the Hold My Beer tour as well together. And then, like I said, just continue to work and play and come up here and write and same old stuff.
Do the same thing over and over again. That's not a bad thing to do, man.
No.
What kind of social media stuff do you do? I mean, do you post stuff? I mean, you engaged in all that?
All the time. Yeah, we're very active on there and always commenting and seeing everybody and trying to keep up with everything as much as possible. It's like a whole nother job.
I don't know how y'all do. I don't do it.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's tough on me.
Yeah.
I guess it's just a different era for all of us.
Yeah, for sure. It's a whole nother job. It really is. I mean, it's trying to keep up with it is a tough thing.
Who do you like out there that you're seeing in the music world these days? Anything cool that's flipping your trigger?
Oh, gosh. See, writing with William Beckman coming up. I really like him. He's doing a really good job. He's a buddy of ours from Texas. So I always get asked that, and then I can never think of it till after I leave, and then I go, I should have said that person. I should have said that person.
Do you ever do any? Is it Drew Womack that also lives down there in Waco? Yeah,
yeah, he lives in Austin. Yeah.
Oh, he's in Austin. He's from the Sons of the Desert.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't know if you had did any writing with him. He's in the area.
God, I hadn't heard that name in a long time. We used to do shows with him years ago.
Yeah, I've never, you know, we've never written together.
Yeah.
And we talked about it a million times. We've never written together.
Yeah.
But he's talented as they get, man.
Yeah, he is.
Really, really good dude. He's singing on a lot of records and doing a lot of stuff, producing, I think. Yeah. Doing really well.
Ever had a chance to work with Benny MacArthur at all?
No, we hang out and, you know, do
I
some stuff.
I love Benny, man.
Great. We have a lot of hangs, but not just other than we'll play some shows together. Like we do a lot of sit-in jam stuff together, stuff like that, yeah.
I met Benny when I was 18 years old. Straight was playing at the Hirsch Coliseum in Shreveport. And we went back to the hotel, and I wound up sitting at the bar with Benny and David Anthony and having a couple beers and got to know Benny back then and have remained friends with him all these years, man.
What a great guy.
He really is. John Michael and all those guys, man. I've been a huge Straight fan since I was just a kid, man. He was that guy. And I watched the Dean Dillon documentary thing recently, just talking about all that stuff. I remember when those records came out, Unwound and Marina Del Rey and all that stuff early on, and just the slickness and just the how much that Texas sound just consumed me. It was just really special.
Great records, man. John Michael Whitby and I grew up, so he grew up in Waco, and he when he got that gig, I was like, I cannot believe you're playing with George Strait, man. I mean, this is insane. Is this even real? Are you messing with me right now? You know, and that's been a lot of fun. He grew up in Waco, and then moved to New Braunfels shortly after that. So, you know, we kind of didn't really see each other a whole lot, you know, through the years. And then, of course, I heard he was playing with Leanne Womack, and then he was playing with Sleep with the Wheel, and man, he's doing great. And all of a sudden, he's playing with George Strait. I'm like, you got to be kidding me, man. And, of course, now I talk to him almost every other day at least. You know, he's one of my best friends in the world. And it's really fun to just – all that whole camp, man, being all those guys, man, just great people.
They really are.
And once a year, we get to do some jamming together for charity and do some stuff. And it's just –
I haven't had a chance to play Strait's golf tournament down there yet, but everybody says it's like the shizzle.
It's a blast. They raise some insane amount of money and do a lot of good.
That's like a 2 or 3 day deal, isn't it?
Yeah. By the time you're done, it's
won that yet?
No.
Randy won it yet?
Of course. Oh, he'll tell everybody he's won every year. Yeah, he tells everybody he wins everything, you know?
That's
Randy's like that. He's like that cologne from Anchorman, you know, 60% of the time he's telling the truth every time.
Panther piss.
Yeah.
You got to love that.
Oh, man.
Well, shoot, man. What else could you?
I got something for you.
What you got?
So after seeing that show down there in Key West, obviously you and Cody Canada, good buddies and brother-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like you guys, you know, might prank each other every now and then. I don't have anything I'm going to pull up.
I thought you could pull something
up. But I was just wondering, like, is there a good prank that you pulled on him or one that he's pulled on you or both? Or I mean, surely y'all had to mess with each other. No?
Man, let's see. Pranks. Man, I don't know. I mean,
because the one from the other night was like, all right, it's Wade Cody Canada's bitch Bowen, that kind of thing. Yeah. Something like that. So,
yeah, then I think what we introduce him is like,
hell, I can't remember.
Yeah,
I was drunk.
Wade is Wade Yeah, makes Cody. Yeah, makes Cody Canada look like a bitch.
That's what it was. Yeah. That's what it was. Yeah.
Well, I got him pretty good. We do a Steamboat deal, you know, festival out there. And are y'all familiar with Reckless Kelly, the band Reckless Kelly? Yeah. They're really good. And they were doing this kind of a, like a tribute to them kind of thing where they were like, you know, talking about their, because they're retiring or whatever. And, or so they say, I don't know what that means. But so they're doing this kind of like tribute to them like for something, how many years. And so they were, they had Cody and I host, you know, and Cross Canadian Ragweed broke up in 2009 or 8, right? And Cody has a band now called Cody Canada and the Departed. And so we hosted this deal for like 2 hours, and Cody just the whole time was just giving me, man, just like heckling me the whole time, like, y'all give it up for my pretty little co-host, you know, Wade Vanna White, you know, all this shit the whole time. And I'm like, come on, man. Like, we're just hosting this. Like, it's a nice sit-down crowd. Like, be nice, you know? Like, so finally, like, at the very end, I was like, all right, well, thank y'all for having us, and thanks for letting us host. And Cody, I know you guys are real good friends with Reckless Kelly. Y'all are best friends, and I know you really admire them and their music, especially because, you know, they could keep their band together and you couldn't. Oh! And the whole crowd went, oh.
Got him.
And he goes, you. That was mean.
That's the problem with cutting people like that. It continues to escalate.
Yeah. Just builds and
builds. You're going to, I mean, come on, man. I'm the quiet, you know, I'm the quiet assassin. I'll eventually just get you, you know. We got a guy one time, we put some Ora Gel on his microphone and then do the old baby powder on the drums. You know, you got to do that stuff. Yeah. We don't go crazy with the pranks.
I put 1,000 crickets on Tracy Bird's bus.
See, I don't do that, man.
He was so
the reason
pissed
I don't
me.
Do that is because I don't want 1,000 crickets on my
he
bus.
He was so like, pissed at me. Oh, he was so mad. It was not good.
See, man, I don't go that far. I
put pigs in Kenny Chesty's stateroom, greased them up real good. I like farm animals.
Cody...
And chickens on the stage.
And chickens on stage.
Cody put a fish, went and bought a whole fish and put it underneath Reckless Kelly's front seat. But he didn't know that they were parking it and going on a bus for like a week.
Oh, and then
so when they got back, it was like
sitting in the summer in the heat. No, you don't get that out of cloth.
No,
it never goes away.
No.
Yeah.
That's the double prank, I guess. Got them good.
Yeah, and when somebody does something to you, it's like, okay, what am I going to do? That next step up, and then it gets worse, and then it gets worse, and it gets worse.
There was one I heard where it was like neck deep of packing peanuts all throughout the entirety of the bus. Like, that's creative.
Where
the hell do you get that many
How
packing
do you do
peanuts
that
quickly?
How do you even do that? Golly.
You start at the back and work your way forward, I guess. That's a lot of packing peanuts. Yeah.
Reckless Kelly, they said to get them back for that, they rented a 2-man horse suit and climbed on stage when they were on stage and came out there and walked up to Cody's microphone and opened up the back and put horse manure right where he was standing. It was pretty good, man.
Yeah, that's kind of stuff I like.
Yeah, that's good stuff. You can't be good pranks, man.
No, you got to do those kind of things. It keeps life good on the road, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, but some people don't take pranks well.
No.
Yeah, so there's some people you just can't prank.
No, some people get way too serious.
They get their feelings hurt. You know, if you dish it out, you got to be able to take it.
For sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
That's the way it goes. I got something coming for you. I've been working on it.
I'm ready, Slick. Come on with it.
Oh, no.
Come on with it.
I'm about to say, because you're the one who asked about the pranks, so I'm sure you're the guy who does the pranks.
Well, I just love great prank stories, and I know he's got some, too. So it opens it up for good comedic value for the podcast, you know?
Absolutely. For sure. Brother, I sure enjoyed you being here.
Hey, man, thank you, man. I really appreciate you asking. I've loved your music for so long.
Thank you so much.
You got so many great songs, man. So thanks. This was when I saw it on the calendar. I was like, man, this is really cool. I've seen some of the stuff you've done. And so this
Well, we're a work in progress. That's for sure. Still trying to figure it out.
Hell, we all are, man.
But I've enjoyed it, man.
Someday you get to hang out with Paul, maybe, and it'll be a whole other.
Well, I was hoping I would be able to get you a shot at tequila, and we could just start off a little early.
No, you don't want to interview Paul.
You need more
on
time.
Podcast. Yeah.
Oh yes,
we want to hang out with Paul. We don't want to interview Paul on the podcast.
Man, but I appreciate you taking some time for me, and I look forward to our paths crossing on the road and catching up again. I've enjoyed so much getting a chance to get to know people like this because you know we pass each other, but we really never get to sit down and get to know each other. So thank you for the time, bro.
Hey, man, thank you. I know you're busy, so appreciate the time as well. Thank you.
Y'all give it up for Wade Bowen.